The news report put it this way. It only took one little zipper to almost derail a bride's wedding day, and it only took the help of a remarkable stranger to make it right again. The bride's name was Jo Du, and she was getting ready for her wedding late September, just last month, in Ontario, Canada. And how many of you have been through a wedding? You know, they tend to be kind of stressful days, whether you are the one getting married or it's your son or your daughter. There's so much momentum that builds to this day, so many expectations riding on this day, and then inevitably stuff happens. And this particular day, the zipper would not go up. As a matter of fact, the zipper was sort of pulling away from the dress, so they tried to do whatever they could. They ran next door, the bridesmaids did, to, as the reporter called it, to try to MacGyver the thing. You know, to try to sort of find a way to fix it on the fly in the event of an emergency. And what they found was David Hobson, the next-door neighbor, who had recently received into his home, just in the last week, a family of Syrian refugees. And the father, Ibrahim Halil Dudu, happened to be a tailor. And so he said, I can't help you, but let me send somebody over who can. And Ibrahim came over, he brought his sewing kit, he took the zipper out, he re-sewed it back in, saved the day. And the wedding photographer, Lindsay Coulter, posted this on her Facebook page, and immediately it went viral. She wrote this, I shoot about 50 weddings a year, and every wedding has its own unique story, but this one will always have a special place in my memory because of the generosity and kindness of a man who had already been through such hardship himself. It's an amazing reminder, she says, that we're all in this together. That we're all in this together. Now, if you had asked Jo Du how her wedding day would unfold, she wouldn't have predicted any of this. And if you'd asked her when her wedding catastrophe of a zipper that would not zip up, it finally did. And the things went fine, and it was a beautiful wedding. If you had asked her who would come to her rescue, she probably wouldn't have any idea that it would be a Syrian refugee tailor. But that's exactly what happened. Now, when the psalmist is asked the question, where does my help come from? When the psalmist wants to make an affirmation, there is no hesitation, and there is full conviction and full-hearted trust. This is from a section of the Bible, Psalm 121, the language we know so well. If you know the King James, it was, from whence cometh my help, right? I lift my eyes up to the mountains, from where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. Perhaps almost as well known and as well loved as the 23rd Psalm, which we looked at a couple weeks ago, the 121st Psalm has long been a source of strength for people. Where does our help come from? Our help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. And on our good days, we believe that. We really believe that. And on our good days, we really live by that. But we live in such a culture of distrust. It's hard always to live with that kind of trust. If you don't believe me, it is all around us. You don't have to look very far. Exhibit A would look something like this. Now, from what I gather, these two people don't really like each other. That's just what I've surmised over the last few months. And what they do is they point fingers at each other and they say, you can't trust crooked Hillary because of her emails. You can't trust Donald because of his ego and because he's only looking up for himself. You can't trust Hillary because she's been a politician her whole life and she hasn't fixed everything. You can't trust Donald because of the things he says about women or Muslims or Mexicans. And the pointing goes on, and it's all about who can you trust. And many of us are dug in on one side or the other, and some of us are dug in outside altogether and say, who can you trust here among these two? And it's easy to become jaded and cynical in our world like this, where politicians promise all kinds of things. You know, what they are doing, they're doing it to a new level, perhaps. But the argument that they're making is pretty old. It's as old as any political race. Trust me, not my opponent. You can trust me, not my opponent. And maybe they've taken that conversation lower than it's ever been before. But it's an old conversation. No wonder we're a bit jaded, because we've been let down by empty words from politicians too many times, and we're just tired. It's easy to distrust. Honest distrust comes in our relationships at work, too. You know, you get a new boss, you knew how the old boss treated you and felt about you, but the new boss comes in and you're not sure if you can really be honest with this boss. Can I tell her everything? Can I really be open? Is it going to reflect badly on me if I report bad performance in some area? Do they have my best interests at heart? I knew my old boss did, but does this new boss care for me the same way? Or you have colleagues who are really good at taking credit for work that you do. And it's hard to trust even the people that are supposed to be on your same team. Or in our personal relationships, we know what it's like to be distrustful, because we've been let down by brothers or sisters who have said things about us. We've been let down by friends who were supposed to have our back and they didn't, or who have stabbed us in the back. We've been let down by husbands or by wives. We've been let down by mothers or fathers. We thought we could trust them, and then they gave us reason not to. We've been betrayed and hurt. It is so easy to distrust. Honest distrust, it comes easily. How do we move then back to a point of trusting God in a world like this? How do we move back to a point of trusting other people again, because we have been disappointed too many times? And one of the great sadnesses is sometimes this level of distrust can drive us to a point where we're not going to trust anybody but ourselves. Everybody else will let me down, so it's all up to me. It's all up to my intellect. It's all up to my resources. Whatever I can do, it's only me, me, me. I'm the only person looking out for me. And so we put up our guard and we develop this way of living in the world that says, I don't need anybody else. But then we have these great theologians to remind us otherwise. The Beatles. You remember, how many of you had this album in your collection or somebody in your family that looks like a familiar album cover? When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone. I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind. I've opened up the doors. You know what comes next? What comes next? Sing it. Help me if I can, I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate, you're not singing very loud. Down. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me? We come to a point when we recognize we cannot do it alone. We cannot go it alone. We thought we could, but it doesn't take much to knock us off that pedestal. We can't go it alone. We were created to be in relationship. We were created to trust God, and we were created to trust these fallible people around us as well, because it's the only way that we get through. It's really the only way that we get through. In my research this week for my sermon on this psalm, this great psalm of trust and turning to God for help, I discovered a phrase that is pretty active in the recovery community. I saw it in a lot of different places, a lot of different chapters of AA and NA posted this phrase, sort of a summary of the 12 steps. Trust God, clean house, that is, take care of your own stuff, let go of this, own the stuff that you need to, and help others. Trust God, clean house, and help others. Wouldn't that be a pretty good way to live if we could live like that? Trust God, clean house, and help others. Whenever I hear that word help, that honest seeking for help, my mind goes to a story by Garrison Keillor. How many of you are Garrison Keillor fans or Lake Wobegon fans or Prairie Home Companion? The show is ended, but the stories are still out there, and I have CDs and I have cassette tapes from years ago with some of those stories, and now listen to them online. And if you've never heard the full story of Pontoon Boat, I urge you to look it up. It's a great story, but I'm going to tell it in shorthand today. There are 25 Lutheran pastors who have come together out of this mythical town of Lake Wobegon, and they've been invited out on Wally's new brand new pontoon boat. So there's Clint Bunsen, the mayor, and there's Pastor Inkfist, the fellow Lutheran pastor, and they're all together. And as they put it, 25 sort of heavy-set gents in earth tones and hush puppy shoes filled on the boat, making good eye contact with each other, murmuring to each other in sort of a ministerial way. As the last ministers climbed on board, she was riding awfully low in the water. 26-foot boat with 25 Lutheran ministers riding so low in the water, to many people standing on the shore, it looked like a genuine miracle. Too many Lutherans in one place. And so here are all these, they're sort of packed in on this pontoon boat. They're a little uncomfortably close together. The water is sort of coming up over the edges a little bit. And then they light the barbecue because they're there to have burgers and hot dogs. And this is meant to be sort of a celebratory thing. And then things start to go awry. Lee, can you, or Clint, you can help.
25 Lutheran ministers, heavy-set men in earth tones and hush puppies, relating to each other and to the problems of rural America, waving away sparks as they landed in their hair and moving up towards the front. Finally, Pastor Inkfist said, "Somebody get some water and put out that fire in the grill, otherwise this boat is going to sink." And five men took their big cardboard beer cups and leaned over the port rail to dip water out of the way. That port pontoon dipped down low. Everybody lurched over to starboard, and then the starboard pontoon went down too. And the Agnes D came to a dead stop in the water and began to turn slightly towards port, having come up to the very edge of the laws of physics. It started to plunge forward, and right then and there, in full view of the town, on a bright, sunny Thursday summer evening in July, it dropped some of its ballast off the forward rail. Eight Lutheran ministers took their step for total immersion, went off the front. Eight Lutheran ministers, not too gracefully, went to give their lives for Christ right off the front of the Agnes D, but in 5 feet of water. It's been a very dry summer. The Agnes D then righted itself a little bit when the first eight went off. All the others were hanging onto the rail, hoping to stay. And then they heard from the stern the crash of the barbecue grill as it slowly had toppled forward. And the ministers turned and looked, and there were hot coals sliding down the deck of the Agnes D towards them, towards the bow. The book of Revelations coming to life. Hot, red, hot coals coming straight towards them down the plywood, and all the rest of them plunged over the side into 5 feet of water. 25 Lutheran ministers in 5 feet of water. Heavy-set gents, they all stood there in 5 feet of water and had just a moment of silence. 25 men in 5 feet of water, some of them not quite 6 feet tall. And so their faces were lifted up towards the sky. Their heads were turned up. They couldn't walk because they didn't know but what there might be a drop-off. They didn't know which way the shore was, which way to go. Their clothes were too heavy for them to swim. They just stood there looking up, their faces all turned up toward the sky. None of them cried for help because they're ministers. Their voices aren't right for crying out. They're all baritones, and to really cry out for help, you need to be a tenor, or try to be. Some of them said, help. 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 25 Lutherans standing in 5 feet of water, looking up towards the sky, until they heard just a little way off to the left, the voice of a little boy. It was Clint's little nephew, Roger, who said, it's not so deep this way. And they edged that way and came up into 4 feet of water. And there, just about 20 feet away, was a 12-year-old boy up to his waist in the water. And he led them on into shore. 25 Lutheran ministers in sodden, heavy clothes, water dripping off them, marched up to shore. It was, as they said later, a wonderful experience.
Now, I love that story for lots of reasons. It's entertaining, it's funny, but I love this image of 25 Lutheran pastors, or any of us really, standing in 5 feet of water with the heads sort of looking up to the sky, to the hills, to God. Because isn't that our lives? When we're honest, we all find ourselves there sometime, surrounded by water, not knowing how we're going to be helped, not knowing the way to the shore, not knowing the safe place for our next foot to go. And then somebody has the courage to say, help. Help. And there's a young boy, a 12-year-old, who says, over this way. It's not so deep this way. And they find their way back to the shore. Now, when we name our honest trust before God, when we cry out to God for help, most often in my experience, God answers our prayers in very ordinary kind of ways. God answers our prayers through very ordinary, fallible people. God answers our prayers not with a lightning bolt or a light down our path, but just the next step forward, the next safe step to shore. And this is the God who is our keeper. The Lord, the shade at your right hand, who shall not strike you by day, the sun shall not strike you day by day, or the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time on and forevermore. And when you cry out an honest prayer like that to this God, God will be trustworthy. And God will provide a way to the shore. You just never know if the answer is going to come in the form of a Syrian refugee tailor or a 12-year-old boy. Or who knows, even if you are open enough and available enough and trusting enough, you might be the answer to someone else's prayer. Amen. Amen.